Good evening. I'm Leland Vitter. Tonight, there is new evidence. There is a double standard about hate speech. Why exactly does Whoopi Goldberg still have a job? Plus, a new FBI warning about China's deep reach into America as the world's bad boys get ready to celebrate the Beijing Olympics. First, and sadly, just in the past couple of minutes, we have learned of another two police officers who gave their lives in the line of duty. A shooter at Bridgewater College in Virginia killed them this afternoon on campus. That campus, and where you're looking at right now, is about 2 hours from Washington, D.C. The shooting began at about 2 p.m. Eastern, so that would have been about 5 hours ago. About a half an hour later, this developed either on or near the campus. And you can see about a dozen police officers with weapons drawn and a suspect who surrendered to police shirtless on the ground. And most importantly tonight, we want to show you the two people who gave their lives, campus police officer John Painter and safety officer J.J. Jefferson. They died protecting the students on campus. They were friends. John, we're told, was J.J.'s best man in his wedding earlier this year. The picture of them in better times, and obviously we'll do what we can to remember them in the days going forward. It appears as though the suspect was taken alive. There's a vigil going on right now. We're going to try to get a live picture from there as members of the campus understandably are in shock. We don't believe any students were injured. Obviously still don't know a motive for this shooting, as we don't in many of the police shootings since the first of the year. When we were going to go on the air a couple of hours ago, as we were preparing the show, we were ready to report 30 police officers have been shot since January 1st, up 67% since last year. It's now 32, the two killed in Bridgewater. Obviously, we'll go back to Bridgewater as developments come in. In addition to the Bridgewater killings today, in Harris County, that's near Houston, they honored Corporal Charles Galloway this afternoon. He was shot and killed during a traffic stop. Tomorrow, New York says thank you and goodbye to Officer Wilbert Mora, killed by a career criminal during a domestic dispute. Crime in New York City is at the highest level in 5 years, and the new mayor says he's going to do something about it, which makes his next move so curious. Sources tell the New York Daily News that unvaccinated officers who don't get the shot will be terminated next month, meaning the NYPD, during this time of rising crime and difficult recruitment, will be down thousands of officers. 88% of the department is fully vaccinated at the end of the year. There's roughly 36,000 officers in the department. So unless that rate went up, an estimated 4,300 would be on the chopping block. Joe Grimaldi, former NYPD officer, now national vice president at the Fraternal Order of Police, joins us now. We can get to the vaccine mandate debate in a minute, whether the mayor has the right to do it or not. But just from a practical and safety standpoint in the city, is it the right thing to do? And he's a former police officer himself.
Well, let me tell you, Leland, deciding to lay off thousands of police officers right now in New York City is utter insanity. Let me just give you some statistics of what's going on in New York right now. Homicides are up 45% in the last 2 years. Shootings are up 102% in the last 2 years. We've had 5 police officers shot in New York last month, which makes up about 20% of all police officers shot in this country. There's crime and disorder everywhere. You can't find a U-Haul truck in the tri-state area because everybody's moving out. Rite Aid is closing their stores because people are just filling up trash bags and walking outside the door. And the idea from the mayor is to fire thousands of police officers? I mean, you combine that with DA Bragg, who just released a memo that said he wants to go even softer on crime in New York. It's completely insane. I mean, people need to understand that America is a much more dangerous place over the last few years than it has been in the past. And we need every single person who is willing to put on a uniform, and believe me, there ain't that many of us left nowadays, that is willing to do it. We need to make sure that we support them, not be looking to fire them because they're not going to take the vaccine.
I want to get your the points you made there about New York are an important one, and that's sort of where we were going with the show. It seems as though the two officers shot and killed today, adding to the 30 that have been shot so far this year, you all put out a press release saying that police officers have never been under siege in the way that they are now. Why? I understand crime going up. Why violence against police officers going up?
Well, you know, Leland, it's funny because it's even worse than what you were describing earlier, that yes, there is a 67% increase in police officers being shot, but that's coming off last year. That was a historic year for police officers being shot. We had 346 officers shot in this country. The FBI just released a report that 2021 was the deadliest year for intentional homicides for police officers in the last 20 years. And I'll tell you what's causing it. It is a toxic cocktail that have been shoved down the throats of law-abiding Americans. It's rogue DAs who are letting violent repeat felons out over and over again. It's bail reform, which has been an unmitigated disaster. I think the American public thinks if you rob somebody at gunpoint, you're going to go to jail. Nope. You're going to get a PR bond where you make a pinky promise to show up to court, and then you're right back out. And you add all of that with the demonization of law enforcement, which continues to this day, despite these historic numbers we're seeing.
Yeah,
and
no,
you
Joe,
put
Joe,
all this
I,
together,
I
and it's not
I
hard to see why this is happening.
Yeah, no, I understand the anger, and certainly to see fellow officers shot and killed. And bail reform and these things have obviously been tried with the idea that it's going to promote a greater social justice. The argument whether or not it's working or not is a different one than what it's doing to the morale of police officers. And I wonder if there is a split between the morale and the issues you talked about for a cop, say, in New York, where you used to work, versus central Indiana or a sheriff's deputy in Florida that's relatively supportive of law enforcement.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been a police officer for 17 years, Leland. I've never seen morale this bad. I represent 365,000 police officers across the country, and we're all saying the same thing. We are sick and tired of the violence against us. And there is no reason why the president of the United States, while senators, representatives, local elected officials should be condemning the violence against law enforcement. And we should be passing the Protect and Serve Act in Congress, which would make it a federal crime to assault a police officer so that we can get it out of the hands of these rogue DAs and actually hold people accountable when they're assaulting police officers.
Right, and there's a number of these DAs who say they're not going to prosecute resisting arrest, but you call them rogue DAs. They're not rogue. They've been elected. They were elected by the people on these platforms of bail reform, sentencing reform. I say reform, but going lighter on these issues. Do you think these DAs are actively trying to get more police officers hurt, or they are simply misguided, or that their reforms need more time, as they would say?
Well, I will tell you that I call them rogue because they refuse to follow the law. They just decide that they're not going to enforce the law, even though I'm not really sure they have the legal right to do that. But prosecutorial discretion, they're allowed to do certain things.
They are.
But I will tell you this, Leland, they continue to let these violent repeat felons
Why? Do you think they're just crazy and they want to get more police officers killed? Or do you think that they're misguided? What's the why of what they're doing?
Well, I will tell you what my belief is. They're bought and paid for by George Soros money, which means they have a certain agenda that they have to follow. And there is no one, and I mean no one, that they won't sacrifice on that agenda. So whether it's police officers, victims, children, it doesn't matter. They have their walking orders, which is to be light on crime, continue to let people out over and over again. And this failed social experiment is costing lives. We had 15 American cities last year experience their highest murder rate in recorded history. It's not working. We don't need more time to see the results. We've seen them, and they're horrific.
So if 32 officers shot in 32 days doesn't change things, and look, some of these DAs that you talk about in St. Louis and then also here in Chicago have been reelected. If 32 officers in 32 days isn't going to change anything, what will?
You know, I don't know what it's going to take, but I guess things are going to just have to get worse until people really wake up and stop electing these folks over and over again. I mean, to your viewers right now, if you're living in a community where violent crime is ravaging your streets, vote these people out. It is the only way that we are going to make a difference. We can only do so much at law enforcement. We're one part of the criminal justice system. We're putting them in jail, but they're letting them right back out on the streets.
All right. Hey, Joe, I know I speak for a lot of citizens, not even for TV anchors, when I say that every time we have to think and hear about an officer being killed, you think about all the officers out there who go to work every day with a badge and a gun to protect all of us. And there's a lot of us who are grateful. We probably don't say it enough. So thank you.
Thank you, Leland. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good to see you. We still haven't heard how Border Patrol, now talking about federal law enforcement, and the Department of Homeland Security plan to solve the problem highlighted by leaked video we showed you yesterday. That was a Border Patrol agent telling leadership of the Border Patrol that the Biden administration's policies are to blame for the record number of illegal aliens that are overwhelming them on the border every day.
And I get it. You come to work, you're frustrated, you're upset because you didn't get the desired outcome that you want. Doesn't mean you give up, right? I know you're not.
It's kind of hard to say that.
To defend the Constitution, not the
agency. It's not hard to say it. It may be hard for you to say it, but I've been doing this for 31 years. It's not hard for me to say it.
And you keep releasing criminals into the country.
You keep releasing criminal aliens into the country is what that last agent said. As we've reported, the Border Patrol largely are now border processing agents. And since they are the only ones who can enforce federal immigration laws, law enforcement, local law enforcement, state law enforcement across Texas says it is indeed open season for the cartels. News Nation's Robert Sherman in Del Rio, Texas, where the sheriff says he's out of options. Hi, Robert.
Hey there, Leland. Out of options and with his hands tied behind his back, the Kinney County Sheriff, which is Kinney County's not too far from us here in Del Rio, he told us that they had the consummate case study for this very issue this morning during a drug bust. This is Sheriff Coe with Kinney County. Listen to this.
They caught, they took down 5 kilos of meth this morning, and that's the guy, he's been apprehended 8 times since December. And he's, like you said, they catch me, they let me go. I'm going to come back, they catch me, they let me go. And wouldn't surprise me if each time he's had dope with him.
I mean, is there anything that you can do for something like that?
Pray, a lot of prayer.
Yeah. Well, you heard that right. The sheriff says that all he can do as a local official is pray. Of course, they're superseded by the federal government, but he blames the feds for not doing enough to dissuade migrants from crossing into the United States, or more pointedly, re-entering the United States illegally. It is worth noting, Leland, that this is not an isolated incident. We've heard from Border Patrol, who has told us that they, just in the last couple of days, have apprehended convicted sex offenders, violent criminals, some of whom have been deported from the United States multiple times. And that is a priority of Border Patrol in order to keep those kinds of criminals, the violent criminals, out of the United States. But some of these illegal reentries do happen, and they have local leaders worried. Leland?
Hey, Robert, thank you very much. We'll stay on it. In the past few years, well, they've taught us a lot. One thing primarily, it's that one false step, one ignorant comment about race is the end of your career, your livelihood, your profession. Whether you're a professor, television commentator, an author, a lawyer, it's the end. That is, unless your name is Karen Elaine Johnson, also known as Whoopi Goldberg. And for that matter, if you're talking about Jews, there appears to be a different set of rules. First, the tape from Whoopi Goldberg on The View yesterday.
Then let's be truthful about it, because the Holocaust isn't about race.
No.
No, it's not about
maybe
race.
A city.
It's about a different race. But it's not about race. It's not about
what
race.
What is it about?
Because it's about man's inhumanity to man. That's what it's about.
But it's about white supremacy.
But these are two Romans. White groups of people.
It's not about race, which, of course, was news to the families of 6 million Jews murdered in the Holocaust because the Nazis believed they were the superior Aryan race and the Jews were an inferior race. So today, she clarified.
My words upset so many people, which was never my intention. And I understand why now. And for that, I am deeply, deeply grateful, because the information I got was really helpful and helped me understand some different things. But it is indeed about race, because Hitler and the Nazis considered Jews to be an inferior race. I regret my comments, as I said, and I stand corrected. I also stand with the Jewish people.
There was a time she said she was also a Jewish person, but we'll leave that to the side for a minute. Really? Should we really believe this woman paid millions of dollars to tell us all how to live our lives is actually that ignorant? Perhaps it's possible. So let's look back and see if she's ever said anything else about the Nazis in the past. For example, When Robert F. Kennedy was rightfully criticized last month for invoking Nazi Germany at an anti-vaccine rally, what did Whoopi say?
But how can anyone be this misinformed, not just about the vaccines and the mandates, but about history? How is it possible?
It seems possible, quite possible, in fact. Karen seems to know enough about the Nazis to invoke them in debate. Here she is talking about President Trump's immigration policies in 2017.
You know, this is not Nazi Germany, man. The president has wide-reaching abilities. He does not have the ability to poop on the Constitution.
Make of that what you will, but here's the problem. There's a little more to this. And we just want to go back to yesterday. Sometimes what people say in the very beginning is the most important. Here is her yesterday on The View.
Then let's be truthful about it, because the Holocaust isn't about race.
No.
It's not about race.
So the ABC PR folks found her a safe space, Stephen Colbert's late night show, because nothing says you are sorry and taking seriously the minimizing of extermination of 6 million people like going on late night TV. Here's her on Colbert.
I understand. I felt differently. I respect everything everyone is saying to me, and I don't want to fake apologize. You know, I'm very upset about that people are misunderstood what I was saying.
There it is. She's upset that people misunderstood what she was saying. So maybe it's us who should apologize to her for misunderstanding. And maybe we should apologize for being upset. Colby Hall, Mediaite founding editor, News Nation producer, Batya Unger Sargon, deputy opinion editor for Newsweek, join us now. Batya, if you don't get fired for this, what do you get fired for?
You know, I'm not sure she needs to be fired, but right after what you just showed on Colbert, she went on to explain again what she meant. And what she said was, look, it was two groups of white people. And then she said, fighting each other. That's how she called a genocide against Jews, fighting each other, you know, as though the Jews were fighting back, as though this was two groups of whites. You know, it was such a horrible, horrible thing to say. And, you know, I think what you started with, that we're in a time of such heightened sensitivity, you really, really have to be careful about, you know, not offending groups. And I think that is good, but there's one group that people seem to really get away with offending, and it's, you know, the descendants of the genocide that happened recently in our history.
Colby, is there a double standard that if you're a liberal, you're afforded a lot broader range, shall we say, and if you are talking about Jews, it's sort of an even larger, opportunity to speak and then clarify your remarks?
You know, I don't know if there's a double standard. I think there's a salient point that you made. I think there's a difference between accountability and contrition and cancel culture. And, you know, there's long been this argument that we shouldn't just immediately, like, fall to cancel culture. You know, I think, you know, as I used to say in my farm in Kansas when growing up, Whoopi stepped in it. And her apology kind of came, you know, she was one of the, like, I used to say to my kid, like, I'm sorry you were offended by what I said. That's not the same thing. She did explain that she had a fundamental misunderstanding of race, but and she apologized, but she doubled down in a way that, I mean, it's hard pressed given where The View is, and it's mostly a business decision. I'm not sure that she'll get fired, and I'm not sure her feet have been held close enough to the fire yet either.
Yeah, you think about the New York Post page six tear. Whoopi Goldberg's in deep, as you say, stepped in it and should be fired. I think Bess Truman wanted Harry to call it manure. That's more Missouri than Kansas. But either way, you think about ABC fired Chris Harrison for a whole lot less than this, Colby. What are your sources inside ABC saying? They still haven't issued a statement on this.
Well, from what I understand is that there's a lot of, you know, there's two things that they're weighing. Like, if it were really easy and The View is a really successful show, they would let her go or at least suspend her short term. I will say, though, from a business decision, this is the most attention that The View has gotten and been talked about and buzz since Meghan McCain left the show. So, yeah. And I will say also, Whoopi Goldberg has been like the leading provocateur, which, you know, when you provoke people and say things that are over the top, which you did a great job of earlier, like when you step in it, don't, you know, the pendulum swings both ways. And of course, she's, you know, she's living in with what she created for herself, and I don't think she handled it as contritely enough as she should have.
Yeah, Meghan McCain had a piece in the Daily Mail, the headline of which I don't think I can read on this channel. Whoopi's half-something apology, double standards for liberals. Bacha, it doesn't even seem like there is anything about her in this where a sense of sincerity or understanding of what she said or what she continues to double down on, which at some level is concerning just for the fact that ABC continues to put somebody on the TV that at very best, maybe she's not anti-Semitic, but is just that blessed ignorant.
Yeah, you know, my cousin is the curator of a museum of Jewish history in Milwaukee, and they often get, you know, classrooms full of Black children coming into the museum and asking about the Holocaust. And the first question that they always ask is, how did they know who to persecute because Jews have white skin, or a lot of Jews have white skin? Which is an excellent question if you're an eight-year-old child growing up in America, right? Like, that's a great question. It is not an acceptable thing for a grown woman with an enormous platform to say. And, you know, just picking up on what Colby was saying, what I'm sure Meghan McCain argues in her column, The View has not been able to find a conservative whose views they can stomach, but this like blatant Holocaust minimization is somehow okay. You know, there is something really unsettling about that.
Real quick, Colby, and Bacha brings this up. How much of ABC keeping Whoopi right now is, look, if we get rid of her, who are we going to get in there?
Again, I think that's that factors into the sort of calculus. There's a lots of variables. And again, if the show was in a stronger position and Meghan McCain was still on the show, then, you know, I think it would be very, very easy for her to at very least be suspended, take some time off. And I suspect that we'll see something like that. I suspect also that the story is not told. It would surprise me if she got fired for this because she was contrite, and they did have the head of the ADL on today, so they've jumped all over this. And candidly, they've got more attention off of this than anything they've done recently, which is sort of sad. To your point, though, it's shocking that she's this far in her career and she made such an obvious error.
Well, either an error or she told the truth about how she really felt, which is something that people aren't necessarily taking as a possibility. Hey, appreciate you both being here. For some reason, I don't think this is the end of the story. Hopefully, it's not. So we'll continue to talk about it. Good to see you both.
Thanks, Leland.
Yeah, thank you. Europeans are getting back to pre-pandemic life. What do they know over there that our government refuses to acknowledge? Plus, an ex-NFL coach fired just weeks ago is suing the league over racism. Civil rights attorney who's been outspoken about the NFL tells us why he might have a case. On the day Tom Brady retires, in less than 2 weeks till the Super Bowl, a former NFL coach says he has proof of the racism shown by the league toward head coaches and general managers. One can't imagine that the timing here is a coincidence. The Miami Dolphins fired Brian Flores in his third year after a 9-8 season. Flores had this to say, quote, "I may be risking coaching the game I love. My sincere hope is that by standing up against systemic racism in the NFL, others will join me to ensure that positive change is made." Flores called the interview process with the New York Giants a sham. Axios reports he found out that the Giants' job had gone to a different coach even before he had the chance to interview. The report also says Denver Broncos general manager John Elway interviewed Flores for the job at Mile High, but Elway showed up an hour late and looked hungover. In his lawsuit, Flores claims the only reason he landed team interviews is because of a rule requiring teams to meet with minority candidates. Bring in Robert Petillo, friend of the show, civil rights attorney. Robert, I feel like when you saw this lawsuit, the thing that you were most upset about or fired up about was that you wish Brian Flores had called you to file it.
Oh, absolutely. This lawsuit's 58 pages of just a step-by-step damning of the NFL. He goes through every single controversy. He names names. He has pictures of the head coaches. He has pictures of the general managers and owners and offensive coordinators. He goes through statistical data. And he truthfully, because this is part of the complaint, is just an EEOC complaint, he just has to get a right to sue letter from the EEOC, which will allow him to go directly into federal court, at which point he can start the discovery process. And that's the thing that NFL fears more so than anything else. Litigation that results in discovery where they have to turn over documents, internal conversations, and that will blow the entire league wide open. So this definitely is a meritorious suit, and I think the NFL has a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, that I think John Gruden may be able to speak to the point that you just made in terms of what the NFL would be scared about. Emails and texts have a long way of living through. I went through part of this, and obviously this dropped at 4 or 5 o'clock Eastern, so had trouble getting through all of the information. Racial breakdown, 3% of coaches are black, 68% of players are black, 0 owners are black. Some of the things he's asking for, though, he's like, we want to try to find a way to have more black owners. Well, isn't this pretty much an idea of you just either buy a team or you don't? How do you sue for that?
Well, the issue is that it's not simply you just buy a team or not. That's not how NFL ownership is. It's a association. So the other owners actually have to vote you in to allow you to buy a team. You can't simply just show up with a bag of money and say, I want to buy the Dallas Cowboys. The other owners have to agree to you being part of it. And part of the allegations are that the other owners have blocked previous minority ownership attempts. This is why only Shad Khan in Jacksonville currently is the only non-white owner of an NFL team.
Are we to believe, if you think about this, the argument is that the NFL ownership, because that's who effectively decides general managers and head coaches, that they are a bunch of extremely rich, extremely successful businessmen who are more racist than they are greedy, and therefore they hire inferior white coaches to better qualified black coaches who would win more and win them more money?
I think you have to look at it this way, that the NFL is very much based upon nepotism. It's as I said, it's an association. It's a club. So the two Super Bowl coaches this year, you have Sean McVay, who's the grandson of John McVay, who was the GM of the 49ers, former coach of the Giants. Then you have Zach Taylor, who is the son-in-law of Mike Sherman, former Green Bay Packers coach.
Nepotism isn't racism. And if you're an association and you want to hire the sons of friends, you can do that. You just can't do it because they're white versus black.
Well, that's the argument that he's making in the case. He's suing partially under the Civil Rights Act of 1866 and a 1981 action, which does prevent you from simply using race as a factor to discriminate against individuals. So if the cumulative effect of your nepotism is for generation after generation, you're only hiring other white people, well, that's the exact relief that a 1981 suit is supposed to elicit.
All right. Fair point when it comes to if the effect of nepotism is racism, then that is definitely an issue. One of the things I read in here, interview with Denver Broncos, Mr. Flores' first sham interview was held in an effort to comply with the Rooney Rule. 2019, Flores was scheduled to interview with Denver Broncos. The Broncos' then general manager, John Elway, and others showed up an hour late to the interview. They dispute that. They looked completely disheveled, and it was obvious they had been drinking heavily the night before. That's perhaps unprofessional, maybe evidence of an alcohol problem. How's that evidence of racism?
The part of what he's suing upon is the Rooney Rule. The Rooney Rule was named after former Steelers owner Art Rooney, which requires the NFL for front office and for head coaching jobs.
I've always wondered this, and you can expand on it. Is that because Art Rooney wanted it because he believed it was important, or because people were mad at him so they named it after him?
I think it's because he actually won it. He thought it was important, but it requires you to at least interview one minority candidate for head coaching, front office, GM positions, those sorts of things. But what it's turned into is a complete sham. You drag these black coaches in from across the country, knowing good and well you're not going to hire them. You check the box, and then you send them along their way. And this makes it very difficult for them.
And Flores says he has emails or text messages that prove that exact thing happened. Hey, if you're right on this, Robert, there's going to be a lot more conversations to have about the discovery, the emails, the text chains, et cetera, if Flores gets this through into federal court. Good to see you, my friend. Thank you.
You too. Thank you. Yeah.
The FBI director's alarming new warning coming up about the threat from China just days before U.S. athletes compete in Beijing. Ambassador John Bolton tells us what the White House should do to keep Americans safe. Welcome back. Just 3 days before the start of the Winter Games in Beijing, FBI Director Christopher Wray said last night the communists in China are now more brazen than ever before, and China poses a greater threat to the United States than Russia.
The Chinese government steals staggering volumes of information and causes deep, job-destroying damage across a wide range of industries. Here in the U.S., They unleash a massive, sophisticated hacking program that is bigger than those of every other major nation combined.
The FBI says American athletes in Beijing should use burner phones, stay off social media, and warns that a mandatory COVID tracking app produced by the Chinese has major security risks. It's effectively spyware. The next few days, Xi Jinping of China gets a visit from his best friend for the opening ceremonies. Vladimir Putin comes to town for meetings. The two grow ever closer as they protect each other economically and help each other militarily. Ukraine, that Putin is ready to invade, is what Taiwan is to Xi. Both men want their neighbor back and appear willing to use force to get it. John Bolton, National Security Advisor to President Trump, former ambassador to the United Nations under President Bush, is with us now. Good to see you, sir. You worked, obviously, at the White House. Is Christopher Wray giving this speech on Monday and the Olympics opening on Friday in Beijing a coincidence in timing?
Well, I think it's certainly an opportune moment, but the FBI has been working on this effort by China to steal intellectual property, get personal financial information, really hack not just into government agencies, sort of traditional spying, but really across all aspects of American life. I think they're doing a great job. But bear in mind, this is something China's been up to for
decades. You think the FBI is doing a great job or the Chinese are doing a great job?
Well, I think the FBI is doing a great job in uncovering a lot of what the Chinese have been doing, but they have been at it for decades in terms of their efforts. It's gotten more sophisticated in cyberspace now. But stealing our intellectual property has made China very, very wealthy, and they have not paid a price for it.
What is the connection between, is that we look at Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, who shows up for the opening ceremonies?
Well, look, over the past several years, China and Russia have gotten very close. They sense common threats to their mutual interest. They're bound by enormous Chinese purchases of sophisticated weapons from Russia and oil and gas. China's an energy poor country. Russia's an energy rich country. So they've got a lot of things in common, and they do pose a common threat politically and across the board. So this is something that the United States is late in understanding, particularly the Chinese threat. And we've got a lot to learn. There's no doubt they're comparing notes very, very closely on how to deal with the Biden administration.
I can't help but get a little philosophical with you because your deep understanding of the world allows for that conversation. Xi Jinping views the rise of a great China that is a superpower, that is what the Chinese Empire was hundreds of years ago. Vladimir Putin views the fall of the USSR as the greatest tragedy in world history and wants to right that wrong. How can those two things coexist?
Well, because they do have a common enemy in the Western world. And I think ultimately this partnership between Russia and China will result in one senior partner, namely China, and one junior partner, namely Russia. I don't think it's actually long-term in Russia's interest. But they've got a division of labor. What Putin wants to do is reestablish Russian dominance, maybe even Russian sovereignty over the former Soviet Union. China's got the Indo-Pacific to look at. They'll deal with each other later. But all of their neighbors, the Eastern European countries in Europe, the Indo-Pacific countries around China, very, very nervous about the intentions toward them, and even more worried about a retreating America that would leave them vulnerable and I think most importantly, leave American interests vulnerable if we turn away.
Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping have taken every opportunity they possibly can to embarrass American presidents, whether it be Republicans or Democrats. Xi Jinping now has a couple of thousand American athletes in his country. And the ability to arrest them for anything he wants and effectively do anything he wants to them. What would be your advice to the White House about the risks of Xi Jinping grabbing a American athlete or trumping up some kind of crazy crime?
Well, I think it's very possible. Look, I don't think we should be participating in these Olympics because of the genocide in Xinjiang province and any number of other things. I think this is a Chinese propaganda show. And let's not forget, the Chinese have grabbed hostages just within the past few years. The U.S. had Canada arrest the chief financial officer of Huawei for financial fraud. She was on her way to being extradited back to the United States. And Beijing seized two Canadian citizens who had done absolutely nothing wrong. The Biden administration capitulated to that pressure, released the Chinese executive, and the Chinese gave Canada back its two citizens. This is a sign of weakness that shows Biden will trade for hostages. So I'd be worried about our Olympians, and I hope we're providing them adequate security.
Yeah, tough to do over there for sure. Ambassador, it's always good to see you. We appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Glad to be with you.
Yeah, good to see you. All right, to Europe now. Ditching the face masks and the vaccine passports coming up, which European countries are starting to get back to normal, what their leaders know that ours don't, maybe. All right, forget face masks, vaccine passports. You can party like it's 2019 in Denmark. They're getting rid of most of their pandemic restrictions as of today. They're the first EU country to do so. Others are following. England, Finland, and Ireland are also easing restrictions and getting back to pre-pandemic life. Joining us from Ireland, Buzz O'Neill Maxwell, nightclub promoter, event manager based in Dublin. We wanted somebody from Denmark, but they were all out partying. So, Buzz, we're glad to have you. Thank you. Boy, what's it like?
It's like it never happened before. It's you know, we've had 2 weekends now of restrictions lifted here in Ireland, and it's back to everybody moaning about not being able to get served at a bar or not being able to get a taxi home.
Well, it sounds like you have some of the same problems we do in America, depending on where it is. 44 days till St. Patrick's Day. Are any of these nightclubs and restaurants and bars scared that the government's going to pull the rug out from under you and shut down again?
I don't think so. We were certainly caught by surprise of the swiftness of the return to normality. We didn't think we were expecting that we'd get to open so soon, that again they would have the cautious approach that they've taken throughout this entire pandemic, and that they'd phase any of their restrictions back in again. So maybe that bars would just be able to open first and restaurants until a certain time. You know,
what do you think happened? Why this change and throwing caution to the wind? Not that I'm against it, but I'm wondering perhaps how to make it happen in America.
It's just a numbers game. I think it's a pure numbers game, particularly for the Irish government. I mean, if we were looking at Ireland as a leader in vaccinations, we were at 92 to then all of a sudden 95% almost before any other country in the world for second. And we were very, very quickly up to 60, 70 and 80% of all adults for the booster. Then, you know, Omicron came and it ripped through society, even though nightclubs and lots of other things were all closed. So I think when they looked at it, it was maybe a couple of things. One was certainly who's left to get it, who's left unvaccinated, and can our hospitals cope with any surge? And if it is a surge, how big is it? And I think they've done the numbers on that, and really there's nothing left to surge here, basically.
No, there is that. Real quick, has the demand come back as quickly as it left when you turn the lights on and start pouring Guinness? Are you pouring as much as you were pre-St. Patrick's Day 2019?
Yeah, there's a little bit of caution. I mean, I think a lot of the very young crowd came out instantly on the first weekend. You noticed some of the more regulars coming out then last weekend. And, you know, this weekend I've got three clubs across the city, and I've tickets sold, 1,000 people in them each night this weekend.
Wow.
I think it was great that we were able to get to do a little bit of a run at it, right, before, because, as you say, Paddy's Day is not that long away. And I think it's just that normality that people just need to and feel a little more, just feel comfortable. Without feeling comfortable. And people here in Ireland certainly seem very comfortable to be able to want to go out again.
There you go. Buzz, we appreciate you staying up late for us, but you're a night owl. That's your business, but we're glad to have you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Leland.
Good to see you. Coming up, we'll tell you how Punxsutawney Phil is more successful and accurate than you might think. Welcome back. It's Phil's big day tomorrow, Groundhog Day tomorrow in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. We were supposed to have a live shot from there, but something happened to the signal, so file images of Phil. Punxsutawney Phil is going to come out to check out his potential shadow. You know how it goes. If he sees his shadow, it's 6 more weeks of winter. If he doesn't see his shadow, it's an early spring. Evidently, the fine folks at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association administration, use your tax dollars to keep track of Phil's predictions, also known as the government's meteorologists. They're weather experts, you see. And over the past 10 years, according to them, Phil's gotten it right about 40% of the time. And to be honest, if you read their article, it's slightly dismissive of Phil. You know, they're experts and all, but curiously missing from their article is their success rate of prediction. And it got us thinking about 40%. It's easy to scoff at, but might not be that bad in the grand scheme of things. For a baseball hitter, 40% is the greatest of all time level. Ty Cobb batted .366 for his career, slightly less than 40%. Ted Williams, arguably the greatest hitter of all time, batted .406 in 1941 before going to be a fighter pilot. Nobody touched that since. So Phil is up there with Ted Williams. Good company. And Phil's forecast couldn't come at a more important time. There's a huge winter storm coming across the Midwest right now. Find me a meteorologist who nails the snow totals 40% of the time. Never. That's why they always give ranges. Phil doesn't have that luxury. The world gets to hedge their bets, every economist on one hand, on the other hand. Meteorologists get to say there's a 60% chance of rain. Phil does not get that luxury. For him, it's either early spring or six more weeks of winter, and he nails it 40%. One more thought. Since spring brings about a lot of weddings, that would be Phil's wedding, perhaps. Well, a couple that gets married today has about a 40% chance of divorce. People don't mind those odds. They actually spend big, big money to celebrate those odds. Still, the folks at PETA, well, they have this billboard up. I'm me, not a meteorologist. Let's chuck the tired old gimmick, says the billboard. They want to replace Phil with either a robot groundhog or a Groundhog Day tree, which kind of seems a little rude. How can you replace a guy with such an important job? PETA acts like predicting spring doesn't take skill. If Phil wasn't predicting the weather, what would he be doing? PETA wants to take away Phil's joy and purpose in life. Think about it. Bees give us honey and pollinate things. Cows give us milk. Dinosaurs, well, they gave us oil. Groundhogs give us weather. What else are groundhogs good for? And I'm not joking. We tried to look up the evolutionary benefits of groundhogs, and nada. Evidently, they're best known for being an aggressive and slightly larger squirrel. So tomorrow, all morning, on Morning in America, Phil will present as he represents groundhogs in their one useful activity of the year. All morning on Morning in America, Phil's there. Dan Abrams is next.